from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning. Welcome to Shale Gas News. I'm broadcasting from my basement bunker, as usual, because of the COVID lockdown. Though, a reprieve might be coming. I noticed earlier this week the governor started relaxing some of the mandates and travel restrictions, while other states are eliminating them completely, like Texas and I think Mississippi, Alabama, and possibly Florida. But regardless, happy to be here and join everyone on the Shale Gas News broadcast. DC Taylor, gotta give him a shout out, keeping us on the air as we broadcast remotely. DC, how are you today?
Hi, Bill DeRozier. How are you? Yeah, doing well, and welcome to another weekend.
Well, it certainly is another weekend, and I understand that you might even be sneaking away here in a little bit. Good for you, buddy.
Yeah, I'm getting out of here for a little bit.
And of course, I got to give a shout out to Matt Henderson. He'll be joining us next segment when we interview Senator Gene Yaw. Matt's tied up with some field work, but I know he's going to get to his phone in a couple of minutes to join us. And of course, Rusty Fender, he'll be joining us a little later in the program for Fender's Fast Facts. Couple of news stories, a couple of updates. One quick thing here that I saw, just because I like to bring attention to it, PJM. You can go to it, pjm.com, if you want to know what our power grid pricing and or generation fuel mix looks like. Today looks to be a mild day, even though it's a little cold outside, about 100,000 megawatts of power, with over 35,000 megawatts coming from natural gas, 30,000 coming from nuclear, and 23,000 coming from coal. Renewables are actually up today, contributing just shy of 10,000 megawatts of power, and power pricing seems to be pretty much straightforward in that $0 to $20 range, which is the sweet spot, as I like to call it. Couple of news stories that caught our attention this week. Biden promises to unions, "I'm all for natural gas." E&E News reports that union bosses gave Republicans a political gift during the run-up to President Biden's cabinet confirmation hearings. They blasted the White House for canceling the Keystone XL pipeline. Labor leaders say that the access has borne some fruit. Biden personally committed to them that he supports natural gas as well as carbon capture and sequestration, two lifelines for the fossil fuel industry and its workers. I brought up natural gas specifically to him, and we spoke about pipelines, said McNamis, who is one of the nine union laborers who huddled with Biden on February 17th in the Oval Office. We've talked about this on the show, and I'm quite bullish on the carbon capture and sequestration build out. And of course, hydrogen, blue, green hydrogen development as well. I think it's a great thing to invest in. I think it'll be a driving force of our economy over the next couple of decades. However, I caution, I just don't think from a technological standpoint, a geological standpoint, and a cost standpoint, we're ready to go all in, as some would say. But I think there are a lot of opportunities. I know there's a lot of funding going to various colleges around the state, especially here in Pennsylvania, but across the country as well. And if I know one thing, especially about drilling into the ground to do something with something, I'm sure the natural gas industry, especially the service and support side of the industry, will come up with solutions to either use old, depleted fields, or maybe even tapping into other geological formations to handle carbon capture and sequestration. And I've actually seen some neat things on the rise as well, one of which being the use of carbon in different products, whether it be like carbon black or carbon fiber, or using carbon in various raw materials. I saw one example firsthand, siding of houses and flooring. So the idea might be, can you turn a negative, i.e. carbon emissions, into a positive and offset feedstock? So it will be interesting. Biden's hurdle, courts dubious of rule by regulation, Wall Street Journal reports. Meantime, the Western Energy Alliance, a Denver-based organization representing 200 companies, is suing to stop a Biden executive order suspending oil and gas leasing on federal lands. "We like our chances in court," said the alliance president Kathleen Sigma. 230-plus judges that Trump has put into place are very significant in this discussion and will be an interesting conversation to follow as the subject matter develops. Of course, we are not in favor on this program of Biden's decision to ban or rather create a de facto ban by stopping new leases and permittings from happening on federal owned land as it relates to the oil and gas industry. And I think people are even starting to see that across the country, as I've seen on social media a lot more concerns slash complaints regarding gasoline prices at the pump going up. Well, I think you get what you vote for. When you do those types of things, there is a equal and opposite reaction. Top oil and gas lobbying group close to backing a carbon tax. The Washington Post is reporting that API, the American Petroleum Institute, the oil and gas industry's top lobbying arm, is edging closer to endorsing a carbon tax on, you know, obviously fossil fuel productions. And this would ultimately lead to the same fossil fuels becoming more expensive, boost prospects for renewable and nuclear energy opportunities, and it would curb pollution that is being weighed by an API policy committee, would back a carbon tax as an alternate to federal regulation and policies aimed at slowing climate change. And many analysts and lawmakers doubt the certainty of any such API move because it's highly unlikely Congress would adopt a carbon tax, especially right now, allowing the trade group to appear to support climate change action while risking little, the Wall Street Washington Post reports. Listen here, I take the position of a free market economy. I don't believe we should be taxing things. I think we're overtaxed, but people don't realize you're going to pay for this one way or another. If a carbon tax is passed, and while oil and gas industry groups will pay that or power plants will pay that, ultimately the consumer is going to see their prices rise. So it's really no different than, say, a increase in sales tax or an increase in your fuel tax at the pump. Granted, the dollars will ultimately go somewhere else, and there's the belief that climate change will be slowed down or eventually eliminated by the use of this kind of taxing policy. I'm all for cleaning up the environment. I'm all for being responsible, but I'm not all for imposing harsh taxes on various things. So with that being said, I see Rusty Fender has joined us. Fender, what do you have for us with your fast facts?
And Bill, a momentous week coming up in telecommunications. March 10th, 1876, Alexander Graham Bell made history by speaking into a device called a telephone. Yes.
Nice.
It wasn't an iPhone back in 1876.
Right.
I think Apple's been around forever. Maybe they were around back then. But of course, the words, Mr. Watson, come here. I want to see you. Of course, that was nothing like the first word spoken on the moon. It wasn't as prolific as that. But
right.
The first phone book, which came out 4 months later, they were right on top of things. It was only 20 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
20 pages. Of course, since the phone was only invented a few weeks before that, a month before that, it makes sense that everybody was on board with this brand new technology yet, of
right.
course. 41% of people under 25 hate when you don't pick up the phone after you've just texted them.
Okay.
Add me to that list.
Right.
You ever get a text, call me, and you call right back, and it rings for 372 rings? Like, where did you just send that text and then, like take a vacation? Where did you go? Watson, come here.
but on another note, I saw a quote from some comedian. I can't remember who it was. She said something like, if you send me a text and I respond and then you call me, I'll call the police on you.
Well, that's pretty funny, too. That was
it
the
was
reason.
On one of those introvert
well, that
pages.
Was, yeah, well, that was the reason for the text in the first place. So
right.
you know, I can understand that.
Yeah.
5% of people in the last year, 2020, DC, mm-hmm. have used a payphone or a phone booth. Believe it or not, that may sound incredibly high,
uh-huh.
but considering most people, actually 8 out of 10 have cell phones, payphones are only used in emergencies when mobile phones are dead. So think about all the call boxes on the side of the highway that are still around.
Uh-huh.
5% of the population is still thankful that outdated phone booths, especially in shopping centers and malls, are still around.
Okay.
Yeah, if you have to make a phone call, I can understand that.
All right.
And as of 2020, last year, just a couple of months ago, how many instant messages are sent in 1 year, and it's in the billions, DC. How many billion text messages were sent in 2020?
Worldwide?
Worldwide.
I don't know. 7 billion people, 8 billion people. 58 million.
billion. It's in the billion.
I'm sorry, 58 billion.
58 billion. 125 billion.
Okay, I was only
125. And that's just my account alone.
It's around here.
125 billion. And DC, because 79% of people use texting now for business communications, which as of a few years ago is acceptable now for business communications. Uh-huh. It makes sense with apps like WhatsApp and iMessage. Text messaging is the ideal way to get your points across in writing, cater to your business needs immediately, and keep communication short and extremely effective.
Yeah.
And I believe that. So
sure.
March 10th. The invention of the device called the telephone back in 1876. DC?
All right. Thank you, Rusty, for that. And we will get back to you more of the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and I'm DC Taylor. We'll be right back.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Get your new roof installed with Green Rhino Builders. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. They service all of Northeast PA. Green Rhino Builders can meet you in person, video chat, or even speak over the phone. They can even get you an estimate without stepping foot on your property. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. That's 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. Green Rhino Builders can even finance your new roof for as low as $79 per month. Does your roof have damage that may have been caused by the weather? Green Rhino Builders is the first company in NEPA to work with all of the major insurance companies and can help you get your replacement roof for only the cost of your insurance deductible. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get someone from Green Rhino Builders out to your home to inspect your roof. Call Green Rhino Builders, 844-900-GREEN, for your free estimate today. Online at greenrhinobuilder.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, we have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule. The 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Cabot Oil and Gas partners with the Weinberg Food Bank to battle food insecurity in Northeast PA.
It's the partnership of foundations and the companies like Cabot that really enable us to be successful.
Gene Brady, president of the Weinberg Food Bank.
We are very blessed. Those regions that have the presence of the gas industry in this area really enables us with things like Bill Glass with Hope, Hunter Share the Harvest, other donations that traditionally have been made to help food banks in their mission to end hunger in Pennsylvania.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. And last week, we brought you part one of Bill and Matt's chat with Joe McGinn, who's the Vice President of Public Affairs at Energy Transfer. And we now bring you part two of that interview.
Joe, your commentary there reminded me of something I stumbled upon from 7 years ago. WNEP, our local news agency up here, came out and did a story on Cabot during the first big polar vortex, or rather the first named polar vortex event. And I can remember that my dashboard in my truck hit negative 20, and I was out on a pad in the freezing wind, and it was crazy. But the story that we told was that our operations up here in Northeast Pennsylvania didn't even stop during that time frame. Sure, we slowed down a bit. We took different precautions, made sure people stayed warm, made sure the equipment was well maintained, water for the hydraulic fracturing side kept moving. But what I was getting at is we're prepared to do it up here. And while Texas definitely was a disaster and people experienced a lot, I don't think people appreciate the care that the industry goes, the great lengths that the industry goes, and the history that the industry has working in, you know, deep, cold weather patterns, especially up here in the north and even up in, say, North Dakota or Canada. But again, kudos to the work you guys are doing down there, energy transfer and in the industry. I do want to bring it back to Marcus Hook. You guys have a lot of investments down there. Matt and I were going back and forth with some questions before we had going on there. But can you tell us a little bit about the development of Marcus Hook? And I know Matt has a few questions to add in as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've spent literally billions of dollars in Pennsylvania and basically retrofitting what used to be the Marcus Hook refinery, right? All across the state with folks listening. You know, unfortunately, there was a reason why Pennsylvania was included in states when they talk about a Rust Belt. You had a lot of industrial might. We've got a great history, and but there's sites that just fell off that were industrial, and they idle and they sit there. Well, that wasn't the case with Marcus Hook, and because, you know, timing sometimes, I guess, is everything. But with the basically the increased presence of the Marcellus and the availability of, in this case, natural gas liquids that are very similar to what the lighter end of what you would handle at an oil refinery, we were able to reproduce Marcus Hook, but only with the connection via pipeline to those Marcellus and Utica gas fields in southwestern Pennsylvania and Ohio and West Virginia. And so, you know, with that, we've invested billions of dollars, created thousands of jobs down there, you know, went from basically about less than 50 folks working there full time to now probably 250. So increased that employment significantly, not to mention the union tradesmen and other folks that work, you know, routinely down there for maintenance, and the ancillary jobs that it creates and supports in Southeast Pennsylvania and beyond. So, you know, Marcus Hook has been a tremendous story. When you look at it and, well, what does that mean, right? If I don't work in the industry and I live there, but let's just look at it from a property tax standpoint. That's right where I grew up. The local school district is called Chichester School District. And, not that if you're from there, you wouldn't necessarily know that, it's just another name, but because of that redevelopment there, it comes with you know, enhanced property taxes, right? You're taxed, you know, based on, you know, how a property's developed and the value of it. And so that, you know, small school district got an injection of millions of dollars on an annual basis and routine basis in additional property taxes. So you go to all the things that natural gas is used for. But think of it on that standpoint. We talk about the you know, the burden of property taxes. You know, it's an older community, and so that's millions of dollars that the school district had to pay for, you know, teachers, for books, for all the things they need, and to do that and not have to ask Mrs. Smith and Mr. Hurley, you know, to pay more on their property taxes. So that's certainly something that we're very proud of and has been, you know, one of the successes of the growth in the Marcus Hook Industrial Complex and the Mariner East system.
And Joe, you talk about that. I mean, that's just a phenomenal story in terms, you know, so many fronts there. Like I said, the increased the economic development, the jobs, and then of course the you know, the those jobs now are, you know, good paying jobs where they're now out able to, you know, not just spend their money in the community, but they've individuals we know have responded, you know, helping their brother out there and helping their neighbor. And the schools, and you know, it's just so much positive out there that unfortunately sometimes that gets lost in the bigger discussion. But you mentioned from school, especially at a time, especially in Pennsylvania, we've seen in a lot of the states, budgets are just tough because the revenue is not coming in, and the last thing anybody wants to see is cuts in schooling. But potentially there will be cuts, but worst case too is we're not going to see the increases that are needed, for schools and helping the education continue. So you kind of talked about the tremendous growth and the impact you've had in the community, and maybe kind of getting your crystal ball out there, Joe, seeing what you think the future might hold down there for the for Marcus Hook and energy resources in general as we go over the next 3-5 years.
Yeah, and so before I do, just an anecdote, right? When you talk about jobs and what happens in the construction industry, and the story of Marcus Hook essentially being replicated, on the western side of the state in Beaver County with the Shell cracker. When I talk to friends out there and the trades and other folks that are involved, some of the stories they share are so similar. So one of the stories I will share that really puts it into perspective is an old family friend that had, basically, as I had known him, he owned and operated just a sandwich shop with his wife. And so he came to a point where he sold that business and had moved on. He was kind of around retirement age, so I figured he'd just settle down. So I get a call from him one day and says, hey, a lot of folks refer to Marcus Hook Industrial Complex and Energy Transfer as Sun or Sun Oil, from this the legacy of the company. So I get a call from a guy and he goes, hey, I'm working, with you now down in Hook for Sun Oil. I said, what do you mean? He goes, oh, I'm working. I said, you're working on the project? And I said, what are you, working at? Did you get the cafeteria contract or something? Are you delivering sandwiches? He goes, no, I still have my Teamster card. I said, oh, wow, you're going to be working down here? I said, what are you going to do? He goes, no, I'm not sure yet, but, they need more folks. So I said, all right, well, let me know. Right. So a week goes by and I'm like, all right, this will be interesting. So I get a call back and I'm like, all right, well, what do they have you doing? And he goes, I never believe this, but I'm a school bus driver. I said, well, what do you mean? And he goes, I'm driving folks around. So we had thousands of people working down there. So from a logistical standpoint, that creates a lot of logistics jobs. Right. So his job was essentially the school bus driver. He picked folks up and he moved them around the different sites, moved them back to their vehicles at the end of the day. And he basically had a bus route and he drove it. So when you think about jobs creating jobs, that's a great example of it that we had down there, Matt. And so when I step and I, look at your question in terms of what the future brings, I think there are absolute, possibilities and really positive ones for what to come. We're at a point where, our pipeline construction and basically talk about sometimes we built the Pennsylvania Turnpike east to west for natural gas liquids. So laid hundreds of miles of pipe and utilized some of our existing pipelines. So we're flowing, natural gas liquids down to Marcus Hook now. We've got some further construction to finish that. And in doing that, we'll open up the state with something called Pennsylvania Access to allow for even more, domestic gasoline and diesel fuel to get in the state using the system and backing out the natural gas liquids on some of those other lines. So that's another positive of the infrastructure for Pennsylvania we'll be able to benefit for and our domestic refineries here in the U.S. As opposed to refineries outside of the country. And so for Marcus Hook, it really, as we come out of COVID and hopefully as the economy rebounds, there's still going to be demand here. You talked about, Bill, windmills and solar panels and the need for that. You're really questioning in terms of what happens when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine, right? So, yeah, we need it, right? We need these hydrocarbons. But the other thing that's really important to understand is, right, even if today, and trust me, I know this is impossible, but if we were able to just say, hey, all of a sudden we figured out energy and we can do it all with with solar and wind. I know we can't, but let's say in a hypothetical we could. We still would need these products. We would need it for the tires on our cars, right? Even if it's an electric vehicle, we would need it for that. Frankly, we would need it to build the whole darn car. The reason where cars are lighter is because they use advanced polycarbonate and things like that that come from and are produced from hydrocarbons. So even if a car didn't run on gasoline, it would still need these hydrocarbons to be built. And so that's the part that we miss. We've talked about, the PPE products with COVID and other things, but these products are critical. They have a number of markets. I think it's important for folks to educate themselves, understand the value of it. And the fact that, again, Pennsylvania, the number two energy state in the U.S., whether we realize it or not, and whether you're from a county or an area like mine, in terms of the Philadelphia area where the production isn't, we're an energy state where we have the energy economy is critical for us and for our state budget. So, let's figure out how to best utilize it. Let's take advantage of it to create jobs. To fund our schools and other support, and do it in a way that's sustainable, and that we keep the jobs here, and we do our best to grow our economy and make Pennsylvania keep Pennsylvania the great state and commonwealth it is.
Well, Joe, we appreciate you coming on the program, of course. And I think we have a lot more to discuss. Matt and I were just texting back and forth as you were speaking that we're going to have you on again here soon because there's so much more with the opportunity. Marcus Hook, the investments Energy Transfer is making. And I could get into downstream build out the opportunities Pennsylvania has in terms of manufacturing value added products, and even the article I recently read about Texas becoming the hydrogen capital of the world, and maybe Pennsylvania should try to do that as well. So Joe, let's just end this today with a recap of what you have, and just reminding our audience, if they want to find out more information about the work you're doing, how they can get in touch with you. And then, of course, we'll get you on again real soon.
That sounds great. Bill and Matt, always enjoy our conversations. Hopefully we'll have more of them in person soon. But thanks for the opportunity to join you today.
Oh, of always. Well, Joe McGinn, Vice President of Public Affairs at Energy Transfer. We're going to take a quick break here on the Shale Gas News. Stay tuned for more after a word from our sponsors.
Do you know the power of America's energy security? Security that starts right here? The Marcellus Shale alone contains enough energy to meet our demand for the next 100 years. And that's just by today's estimates. If Pennsylvania were a country, it would be the fifth largest producer of natural gas in the world. All thanks to the incredible natural gas production right here in northeastern Pennsylvania. Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation. Producing abundant opportunities.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems and Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000. Montrose, 278-7368.
We've now been partnering for a couple of years with Cabot to provide what we call Fill a Glass with Hope In this past year, we served hundreds of kids, and we provided nutritious milk in a quantity of 6,462 half gallons. We're grateful, as are the hundreds of children that are receiving the benefits of the program as a result of what Cabot and its partners do.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News. It's our pleasure now to welcome Senator Gene Yaw, Pennsylvania's 23rd district, representing Bradford, Lycoming, Sullivan, Susquehanna, and Union counties. Senator, thank you for joining us on the program.
Yes, happy to be here.
Well, Senator, the reason we reached out to you over the last couple of weeks was a recent decision by the Delaware River Basin Commission to, permanently ban or officially ban natural gas development. The DRBC, of course, has been instituting basically a de facto ban for the last decade, as long as I've actually worked in this industry. But they've moved to finalize that ban, and you've become an outspoken critic of that move. Please tell us why.
Well, I mean, Senator Lisa Baker and I have filed a lawsuit against the DRBC on the basis of what they've done in their past action is a taking of the property rights of the individuals that have gas rights in that whole Delaware River Basin area. And I mean, for an entity like that to stop development totally and say you can't do this, I mean, our position in the lawsuit is that's a taking. Now, what they did just recently, I'm not sure that they banned gas drilling. Well, maybe they did. I thought that they just banned fracking.
Well, one and the same when you think about it. The you need the hydraulic fracturing to accomplish that. But it seems to be that their move is in reaction to the lawsuit that you mentioned. We've had you on the show before. And if they felt that they had the authority to do all of this, why do they even need to move to ban fracking or the practice of hydraulic fracturing? And I think it has a lot to do with how this case is proceeding.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I don't know. I mean, nobody has told me this, and I may be totally wrong about it, but I think that what they're saying is we're not going to ban drilling. We're just banning fracking. So, you know, you can drill, but you just can't frack, which in the real world makes it economically not feasible, and it's just not doable. Because the overwhelming majority of gas and oil, which is produced in the United States, is utilized as fracking. I mean, that's the key. And
I think the bigger issue here is this isn't a state and it's not the federal government. It's kind of that whole shadowy fourth layer of government that nobody really wants to acknowledge or put back in its place. This is a commission, and this commission was given a charter by the federal government and by the member states to protect water quality and to manage water quality, right? I don't believe anywhere in its commission was it given any sort of powers to ban any sort of practice or industry from developing. And then I know it raises a lot of questions. If they can do this to the natural gas industry, what else can they do to other industries that they don't like? And what stops them from continuing this? Because keep in mind, the DRBC, while it only covers, say, Wayne County and Pike County in Pennsylvania, it does extend all the way down to New York City and into the city itself. And why aren't they, outlawing or looking at practices that could be deemed counter to water quality down there as well?
Well, that's true, except for the evil empire here is the gas industry, and New York and New Jersey have never been friends of ours when it comes to the gas industry. They just want to use our natural gas to tout the fact that they've reduced their emissions by about a third, I think, but they forget what the rationale is, where that comes from, and it comes from utilizing our gas. But the way I look at it is a Pennsylvanian, there are two other states controlling what's happening in my state. And, you know, our Secretary of DEP voted for this ban on fracking. And I don't understand it at all. I mean, somewhere along the line, I just want somebody to be a cheerleader for Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania energy, and what we can do here and what we are doing and what we have done for the environment without people looking over our shoulder. I mean, I'm looking for somebody like that.
Yeah, and I was gonna ask you about Pennsylvania's vote in favor of this this controversial ban of hydraulic fracturing, especially since Pennsylvania and most of the members of the DRBC Commission sit on the SRBC Commission, which covers arguably the largest portion of the state. Most of the natural gas development, especially in the north and the northeast, Marcellus, falls under the SRBC, which has said there's been no substantial impacts to water quality and that the practice of hydraulic fracturing, is allowed to continue. So why is it that Wayne County and Pike County under the DRBC with the same voting members gets one vote and then the rest of the state, or again, in the SRBC areas, get another vote? That goes to a bigger question that I'd like to dive into, and it's the inconsistency by this governor and his secretaries that as it relates to, say, the natural gas industry, and this is a case in point. Why is the DEP voting to ban it in Wayne County? Because it's so dangerous over there, but yet in every other county in the state of Pennsylvania, it's allowed to happen.
I don't know. You've asked a lot of good questions, and I don't understand that either. I wish I could get in their heads and think about it. And I still go right back to what I said originally. I get so disappointed that we don't have somebody who actually supports Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania energy and what we have here in Pennsylvania and what we can accomplish and what industry has accomplished on their own. I don't understand the thinking. I don't know whether it's that people are so afraid or they think they're environmentalists, which is actually, when you think about it, they're doing exactly the opposite from what environmentalists should be doing, in my opinion. I don't understand it at all.
If people did understand, who knows? Pennsylvania, again, just doesn't make sense. The state is number two behind Texas in natural gas production. Yet we have a governor who continues to push a severance tax as a means to an end, but then also wants to push increased regulation and other types of carbon capture and trade. And what I'm getting at is we have inconsistency across the board. So let's pivot from the DRBC. I know Matt Henderson and I were chatting before we got on this interview with you about the upcoming budget proposal or the budget proposal that the governor has given and then his renewed calls for a severance tax.
That's a perennial thing out there that we're going to have a severance tax. Okay. It's there. Are there things that we should talk about? I don't know. Maybe there are things that we should talk about, but not the way that the governor is going about it. And, you mentioned one thing, which is really important to me. You said it, you mentioned about, Pennsylvania being number two in the United States to Texas as far as gas production. Well, stop and think about it in a more global aspect, and that is that makes Pennsylvania one of the largest producers of natural gas in the world. And my question is this to anybody. Do we act like it? Do we act like we are one of the largest gas producers in the world? The answer is no. We sit back, we hide. It's almost like the administration is embarrassed to say, here's where we stand in the world, and here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to better the world, better our economy, and things that we can do based on the gas industry by promoting it rather than acting as an anchor to it. the severance tax, the way it's been proposed in the past and forever, it's a no-go. I mean, right from the get-go, it's not going to fly. And I would think after 7 years that there might be some different approaches to it. But unfortunately, that's not the case.
Yeah, and Senator, if you mentioned, if you look at the newest proposal, I think it's, 7.0, iteration here, projected, all these estimates now are, $340 million, I think, almost, 50% more than what came in on average, about $200, $225 million comes in from, from the impact fee or impact tax. And I think, you've talked about, your district here and your, how much money has come in into this area. We look at it across the state, it's open for every county and every county can benefit from it through the legacy fund and some of the other, the other monies that are put out there. But it always seems to be this, we're only state that doesn't have a severance tax. And I believe I've heard you say numerous times, well, we're the only state who has an impact fee. So we kind of look at, and this is at times, it's a place to plug the budget is kind of sometimes we hear, this can provide some more revenue to the, to Harrisburg or to the budget. And unfortunately, we know sometimes that money doesn't go back to the district. So I may just expand upon that a little bit. I know we forget, the local impact of the impact fee, coming to the districts and, maybe what your thoughts and, maybe some of your brethren in Harrisburg, what they think about, maybe an impact or severance tax that would take away some of that money going back to the communities.
Well, Matt, if you recall, about 2 years ago, the Senate passed a severance tax, and we sent it over to the House. And I thought that was probably at the time, I forget all the details about it, but I don't think that it was unreasonable. And we had significant discussions with several of the big industry players about that proposal. There were a lot of trade-offs that went with that, from DEP to, involving permitting, several other things like that. And the one bottom line for me in anything that, I don't care what you call it, whether you call it a severance tax or some other fee or whatever, is got to be that we have to preserve that amount of money that comes back to the counties and municipalities. That's the bottom line in anything for me. And on top of that, we can't do something that's going to really harm the industry. So, I mean, those are some of the parameters, and I don't care what you call it. I'm willing to talk about some of those things, but those are my bottom lines. And you're absolutely right. The benefits that have come back in the impact fee, the amounts of money that have come back to my district. If I, as a legislator, went to the powers that be in the budget negotiations and said, oh, by the way, I need over 10 years, $340 million or whatever it is, they would look at me like I was crazy. But that's about what has come in to my district over the period of time that the impact fee has been in existence. It's been invaluable. And it's one of those few cases where I think that the legislature actually took into consideration what happens in rural Pennsylvania, and they actually looked out for the interests of rural Pennsylvania. So I'm going to protect that. I don't care, no matter what. We're going to protect the money that comes back to the municipalities and the counties from the gas industry. And that's the bottom line for me. I'm willing to talk about these different things. I'm willing to negotiate with DEP. I'm willing to talk to DEP about their permitting and how much time it takes and what they do. And we've talked about consistencies and inconsistencies. I mean, this isn't rocket science. Let's just Let's talk about it.
Yeah, and I appreciate that because, you know, I know one thing, you know, in this industry, like you said, is the lack of consistency, you know, from, like you said, from permitting, compliance, and, you know, we do realize, you know, these are, you know, men and women trying, you know, doing their job, but some, like you said, you know, what happens in North Central PA should happen down in Southwest, you know, Southwestern Pennsylvania as well, or, you know, just across the state, like you said, some of those consistencies. And we do know you've been pushing and have helped push that. But, you know, as we continue moving forward and, you know, to your point, there is, you know, if they're the appetite is for a, you know, a tax or a fee, whatever, like you said, they want to call it, keeping that local component is got to be key. Like you said, you know, visions have denied flashed in my head as you, you know, if you had asked for that $300 million over that period, I mean, you'd be laughed out.
And that is part one of Bill and Matt's conversation with Senator Gene Yaw. We'll bring you more of that next week. Stay tuned for the top five stories of the week and the job segment coming up on the Shale Gas News.
Cabot has been, you know, a fantastic corporate partner because they caught the vision. We have a goal to end hunger in Northeast Pennsylvania by 2025. Cabot's contribution is helping make that happen.
I live in Springville. I'm a landowner in Auburn Township. They've treated me with respect, my property with respect. They do an excellent job. Everything has been neat. There's never been anything out of place. Anything that they said they were going to do, they did. They came to you and told you what they were going to do. They gave you a timetable. They followed that timetable. Do not be afraid to invest with these people.
Industries like Cabot not only helped and lent their support to the Dietrich Theater, but they reached out and asked how they could help in other ways. Cabot has shown us that they want to invest in our community, that they're here to stay, and they want to support us for the long run.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Linde Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindeco.com. Linde installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindeco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's continuing education department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and I'm DC Taylor. Coming up, we'll talk about careers and jobs in the Marcellus Utica in the gas industry is the energy industries. But first, it's the top five stories over the past 7 days. We get this from MarcellusDrilling.com. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So this week again, we have a summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. Coming in number five last week, biggest withdrawal from underground natural gas storage in 2 years.
While the weather is without a doubt the biggest influence on the price of natural gas, there is another key influence that traders watch closely: storage numbers. Natural gas is stored mainly in large underground caverns during in the summer months called injection season in April through October. Nat gas is later withdrawn for use during the winter months, heating or withdrawal season, which is November through March. The U.S. Energy Information Administration, EIA, reports withdrawals for the week ending February 12th were the 12th largest on record since 2010 and the biggest one-week withdrawal in the past 2 years. We'll be interested to see the withdrawal numbers for last week, perhaps even more. A large withdrawal is a signal that supplies are decreasing. In a pure commodity market like natural gas, less supply available for the same or increasing demand spells higher prices. We like the sound of that. Rusty?
Thanks, DC. Number four, a prediction. The United States is headed for a natural gas storage crisis next winter. While the recent spike over the past week in natural gas was a fluke, an anomaly due to a rare snow and freezing cold event in the nation's southwest and mid-continent regions, the long-term price of natural gas has not moved all that much. Now, the NYMEX futures prices for natural gas month by month for the foreseeable future has stayed under or just above the 3 multi-million BTU mark. Yet we continue to see predictions of alarm that we're headed for a natural gas shortage and with it a rise in gas prices. One such prognosticator is an investment advisor we read periodically on the Seeking Alpha Investor website. We've quoted from posts authored by HFI Research many times on MDN. Their thinking and analysis is typically accurate and prescient. Is it this time? HFI Research is saying that we're headed for a natural gas storage crisis next winter. The prediction is that natural gas prices, including LNG prices, will shoot higher as the storage crisis sets in, DC.
All right. The third most popular story over the past week. Construction continues at country's biggest nat gas power plant in Ohio. From time to time, we check in on the Guernsey Power Station, a mammoth 1,875-megawatt Marcellus Utica gas-fired electric generating station being built in southern Guernsey County in Ohio. As near as we can tell, it is the biggest nat gas-fired plant anywhere, period. We spotted a story about work being done to extend a sewer line to the plant, meaning the project remains active and on track to come online in the fall of 2022. Guernsey Power Station is located in the heart of Ohio's shale gas development area in Valley Township, Guernsey County. The plant will use clean-burning natural gas from the Utica and Marcellus shale plays. The plant also has direct access to existing overhead electrical transmission lines. The Ohio Water Development Authority has just awarded the village of Byesville a $1.4 million low-interest loan to complete phase two of a sewer line extension project to connect to the power plant. Rusty.
And number two, DC, EQT update, making moves to drill more in West Virginia in 2021. Now, yesterday, the country's largest natural gas producer, EQT Corporation, released its fourth quarter and full year 2020 update, holding a conference call with analysts to discuss the results. The update shows the company produced an average of 4.45 million cubic feet per day of natural gas in the fourth quarter. Now, although there were plenty of free cash flow for the year, on paper, the company lost $967 million in 2020, which is an improvement over the year before it lost $1.2 billion. Perhaps the biggest news for us coming from yesterday's update is that the fourth quarter EQT turned its drilling attention to the West Virginia Marcellus. EQT plans to do much more drilling in West Virginia this year, too. In the fourth quarter, EQT did not drill or spud any new wells in the Pennsylvania Marcellus. But don't let that fool you. EQT horizontally drilled 25 wells, fracked 19 wells, and turned to sales 30 wells, all in the Pennsylvania Marcellus in fourth quarter 20. President and CEO Toby Rice stated 2020, I'm quoting here, was likely the most transformative year in EQT's history, one in which we turned vision into actions. We significantly outperformed the financial and operational plan established at the beginning of the year, positioned the company for the long term by strengthening our balance sheet, and evolved the organization to sustainably create value in any future environment, end quote.
Okay, here's the number one most popular story on MDN, MarcellusDrilling.com. Over the past week, Antero update, drilling 80 to 85 wells in 2021, new $550 million investor. Antero Resources, one of the largest drillers in the Marcellus Utica, working primarily in West Virginia, issued its fourth quarter and full year 2020 update a few weeks ago. During the fourth quarter, Antero pumped an amazing 3.65 billion cubic feet per day equivalent of natural gas. Antero is the third largest producer of natural gas in the U.S. The company drills in the wet gas region and reports selling 132,000 barrels per day of NGLs to both Marcus Hook near Philadelphia and Hopedale in Ohio. Antero is the second largest NGL producer in the U.S. As part of the quarterly update, Antero announced it has formed a drilling partnership. In other words, recruited a new investor with Quantum Energy Partners, which is investing $500 million, 500 to about 550 million into Antero's drilling program beginning this year and running until 2024. Antero plans to drill up to 85 wells this year and complete 70 wells. Well costs average $690 per lateral foot in the fourth quarter, but are forecast to drop to $660 in the first half of this year and further decline to $635 per lateral foot for the second half of this year. And there you go. Those are the top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email. Just go to MarcellusDrilling.com/email. Now it's time for the jobs segment. Exploring your careers, careers in the energy and the gas industries. It's brought to you by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty.
Thank you, DC Taylor. In Pennsylvania, Pannoni, looking for a construction inspector out of Mechanicsburg. CMC Energy Services, a field operations supervisor opening out of Blakesley. JW Energy Company, looking for a compression service technician out of Towanda. PP&L looking for a district service technician for their trainee division. It's out of Tannersville. Tesla looking for a lead solar roofer. It's based in Pittsburgh. Duquesne Light looking for a senior energy engineer out of Pittsburgh. Gas field specialist, a welder's helper out of Mansfield. Crosby Energy Services, a lease operator based in Towanda. Baker Hughes, a field engineer for their wireline services division based in Mount Pleasant. And Peak Oil Field Services has an opening for a secondary containment laborer out of Washington, Pennsylvania. In Ohio, Think Power Solutions, looking for a utility inspector for substations and transmission lines out of Chillicothe. Valero Energy Corporation, the Valero, looking for process operators for their ethanol plant out of Bloomingburg. TC Energy, a regional operations manager out of Defiance. Gulfport Energy, a control room technician based in St. Clairsville. Worthington Industries, an oil and gas and CAD supervisor based in Columbus. Duke Energy, a vegetation management specialist out of the Montford Heights area. Ohio Transmission Corporation, looking for an operations coordinator based in Columbus. SWCA Environmental Consultants, looking for a land development specialist headquartered in Cincinnati. KS Energy Services LLC, a safety specialist headquartered in Cincinnati. And the City of Cleveland, looking for an electrical worker based in Cleveland. Moving to West Virginia, RDR Energy Resources, a general laborer and roustabout out of Clarksburg. Alliance Consulting Incorporated, looking for a GIS analyst and a staff scientist out of Beaver. TC Energy, an administrative assistant opening based in Charleston. EarthRes, a professional land surveyor headquartered in Morgantown. U.S. Well Services, an equipment operator headquartered in Jane Lou. Apex Energy Services, looking for roustabouts out of Wheeling. Antero Resources, looking for a director of production operations headquartered in Bridgeport. And West Virginia University, opening for an assistant professor for their Department of Petroleum and Natural Gas headquartered in Morgantown, West Virginia. In New York State, GE Renewable Energy, a wind energy field specialist out of Schenectady. Skagen Energy Services, a water evaporator field technician headquartered in Waterloo. JF Petroleum Group, an experienced service technician out of Elmsford. Alamon, looking for utility pole inspection supervisor out of Binghamton. Exelon Corporation, an electrical associate for their 9 Mile Point nuclear station based in Owego. New York State Electric and Gas, an engineer for their transmission planning unit out of Rochester. And Canacre, looking for a land agent and a title specialist as well as a land administrator, 3 positions for the entire state of New York. And those, as DC mentioned, are the jobs this week sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. And we thank you all for listening here each and every week on coming up on our 8th year here on the Shale Gas News on our network of stations, Gem 104, of course, online all the time at talkwilliamsport.com. And we'll see you next weekend for the Shale Gas News. For Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thank you for listening to the Shale Gas News.